Off the Ball.
In association with AIR. With live AIB club football and hurling action this month on AIR Sport.
This is News Talk. Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
We've Keith on the line and Dunnock is with us as well. Apologies, we are very late. Dunnock, the last time you were speaking to us was a few weeks ago. You've played for the Babas since then. A 27-24 win over Tonga.
Yeah, my type of Babas game, Joe. Two mauls to win the game. Push over tries from mauls. So
the dream.
It was a horrendous night in Thomond. Really bad weather. Kind of big wind and rain, which didn't allow for either teams to go out and have a goal. So I was quite glad of it. Protected as any front five was. So, yeah, good win. But the whole experience of the Babas, for me, it's like a retreat. I'll be honest with you. Rugby has got so result focused, and to just go into an environment where you're given the bare minimum of structure and calls and plays, and it's up to the individual to go up and put in a massive performance. So when you come in the door, you're greeted, they're telling you to have an incredible time. They actually tell you, we want you to have the best week of your life.
Right.
But we want you to put it out there for that 80 minutes. And it leads to it. I played in 2014 against England. And I won't name him now, but one of my teammates was having a bottle of beer in the pre-match meal to stop his hand from shaking because he drank so much that week. And he went out and he was man of the match. You know, so it's just...
So we just need to Google who the man of the match was in that game.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, Joe, I might as well just name Rennie Ranger.
You did your bet. It was an honest mistake, in fairness.
Yeah.
True. So that's good. I guess the Babas don't have to justify their existence the same way the Lions do, so they can enjoy it a bit more.
Yeah, but I think it's an important tool as well, and I think it's underused. Like, for me, Jordy Murphy played, and he was brilliant, and it gave him a shot to kind of put himself forward for Fiji. So I think the home unions need to look at it as a kind of vehicle to maybe use the players that aren't getting, you know, like, the big debate is, and we'll have a chat about Joey Carberry,
yeah.
But if he's not getting game time, or there's players, you know, like, everyone would like to see Rory Scannell at the level, and it's an international, you know, it's at that level of competition. So I think it just needs to be used a little bit smarter. I know there is the enjoyment side of it, but, you know, when it comes to the match, like, I'll be honest with you, you should have seen Robbie Deans at halftime in our game. He went crazy, you know. Well, sorry, he was really disappointed that we were behind. We had left the tradition down, and he made four massive changes straight away. And, you know, the thing is to enjoy yourself, but get the win and get the performance, and that wasn't happening. So I think there is a place for it when you look at how Jordy went as well.
Keith, you did it once, the Babas thing?
I did, yeah. And I loved some of the traditions, and some of, you know, they can just make it up as they go along. The previous time the Babas had played South Africa was 1961, and the front row was Ronnie Dawson, Sid Miller, and my father. And on the wing was Tony O'Reilly. And so when we played in 94 against South Africa, they said, well, we'll, you know, father and son, that's good. We'll put Keith Wood on the field. So we ended up with an Irish front row and an Irish winger. So myself, Poppy, and Claw were the front row, and Simon Gagan was on the wing. And I'm laughing at Dunica's view of the actual game, where it was a very non-Babas. England wouldn't let any players of their current crop play with us in 94. And I remember just kind of, and it just shows you how long ago it was, Dunica got a week together. We got 2 days, one and a half training sessions, and it was quite social. And we just went out and said, yeah, do you know what? Don't know that we're going to get there with this big South African team with running the ball all over the place. Let's just beat them up front. And it was an absolute bruising game, and we beat them. It was fantastic in Lansdowne Road, which was crazy when the noise there was phenomenal, and it's a great memory. And I love the fact that my father played for the Barbarians and I played for them, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, amazing. A Springboks team would win the World Cup just a year later as well, so no bad thing. Monday night, Eddie O'Sullivan was on talking about the Fijian game, and Joey Carberry came up. His future 10 has been talked about a lot, as it seems fairly obvious now. He's Ireland's second, he's Ireland's backup number 10 as well. So Eddie proposed something he knew would not best please everybody.
To be fair to the lad, if he's going to play international 10, he needs to play 10 as much as possible.
Does he need to leave Leinster in the short term?
He may have to consider that possibility for his career. That's something, it's kind of, it'll be anarchy to say that now because he is so important to Leinster. But he's playing full-back for Leinster. What happens when Rob Kearney comes back for Leinster and Jonathan Sexton's fit? Like, what happens there is Rob Kearney lose out to Carberry, even though Joe Schmidt might have Kearney ahead of Carberry. Like, there's a lot of conundrums there. Mm. And I've no doubt that Joe Schmidt will have to sit down with Leo Cullen and say, look, this is what I'm thinking. What are you thinking? Let's try and find a way here. Because he does need to play 10. I think he did extraordinarily well on Saturday at 10, given that he hasn't played at 10 for so long.
Yeah.
But realistically, going forward as an international, out half he has to play there.
It's not sustainable for you to dip
into 10. It's not fair to him. He could get by, but it's not fair. I don't think it's fair to the player. It's a massive leap up, like international. If he has to go into a Six Nations game against England in Twickenham, let's say Johnny Sexton could enter, and he hasn't played 10 since last Saturday. That's an unbelievable ask for the guy, you know. And then if it goes wrong for him, we'll all be jumping up and down and might be his fault at all. I think we're not going to fix it in that time frame. But if that happened in that time frame, it'd be a problem. So he does have to think about, I think his future is at 10. He's proven that without a shadow of a doubt. And it's a tricky one, but he does need to play there, I think. That's my own opinion.
So before I get your thoughts on this, Stephen Doyle here at offtheball.com wrote a piece yesterday and he made a very good point, Dunica. I hadn't quite realised this, or certainly it was to this extent. Over the last 2 years, Leinster have had 61 competitive games. Of those 61, Johnny Sexton has started 24. So you read that and suddenly you think, well, actually, there are a ton of games here for Joey Carberry to get his air miles up. Or does he need to leave?
Yeah, I can see both sides of it. But the point there is that Ross Byrne is playing 10 for Leinster this year in those games that Johnny isn't playing. So I think both sides of it are quite right. I can 100% see what Eddie's saying. And I think it's right. I think he is a 10. And I think he needs to be playing there. Whether it's a case for Joe Schmidt to go to Leo and say that I want to see him in those games where he's not playing to maybe leapfrog over Ross. But, you know, you could understand why Ross would nearly be upset then, because he's been playing quite well. So I think it's really interesting to see, could we use the four provinces? Like, is there an opening in one of the other provinces there to allow a quality 10 like that to come in? But I think the more professional it gets and the more we go on in time, I think that'll happen more and more, that players will play with other provinces to get a chance, because you could be blocked. But as well, for Joey Carberry, he's around Johnny Sexton. You're around the best, for me, you know, the best 10 in Europe. So to be able to train with him, see what he does. But I certainly agree with Eddie that you need game time. So it's a hard one to get the balance on for me. I wouldn't fault if he did have a look around. I think it would be brilliant for Ireland if we had someone of his class playing 10 more often. I think we definitely need competition in that spot. If anything was to happen, Johnny, I think we're a bit under strength, because, you know, you look at the Munster 10s, they're still battling it out between them. There's no one clear-cut number two, you know.
Joe Schmidt was asked about Keith Naturally on Saturday, and he started off by saying, look, it's an imperfect world. He didn't try and cover over the fact that this is not ideal.
No, but I love it. I mean, that's great shit stirring by Eddie, to be honest. You know, because there's no way he's going to leave Leinster, and there's no way he should leave Leinster. And I think if you put the whole thing in context, both Ireland and Leinster, And if you go back and look at Carter playing 10 and look at Bowden Barrett playing 15 or coming on at 15 or coming in at 10 to cover up towards the end of a career, you can maximise the ability of both, and you want a sense of longevity as well where you can. There was injuries all over the place in the Leinster back line, and actually when Sexton is playing, I would want to see Carberry playing 15. And yes, I would still say he's a 10, and I think he'll be an incredible 10. And when we need him, he'll be an incredible 10. But with all the injuries at fullback, I think that's one of the reasons why Ross Byrne got in there. Ross Byrne played well in there. Mm. But for me, Carberry is a better 10 than Ross Byrne. But like I know if we look at a Munster perspective, you still want more scrum halves at Munster, even though Conor Murray is the best scrum half in Ireland. I'd still want another one there so that he doesn't have to play 80 minutes every game, you know. And I think that's there's a nature of that. And but I still couldn't get over last weekend. The negativity around the performance on Saturday and the comments saying that, well, now we know that the depth isn't there. There's plenty of depth there. Mm. It's not going to be suddenly a change of 15 players every week that you go and play. That isn't what happens. That isn't a sign of depth that they'll all play together. Those guys have spent as much time together as Dunica did playing for the Babas against Tonga. Mm. You know, that's the reality. Mm. And the point is, you want to have a core of a team, and if you have 10 or 12 guys and suddenly you get an injury and your 13 gets injured, your second 13 gets injured, your third, that's where the depth comes in. It isn't wholesale changes all the time. Let's put in a second team. That isn't the necessary. I thought Ireland played not great, made plenty of mistakes for a team that was like a scratch team.
Yeah.
They never played together as a group. Look at the Lions, which their first match and the summer tour, they were all over the place.
Mm.
That's what happens. It becomes very hard. And against a really big Fijian team, now, who weren't trying to play the ordinary flash that they do, they were playing a big, heavy game. I thought we did well in the fact that we got a win at the end of it. And I was so happy for Ian Keatley when he came onto the field. He looked assured, capable, focused, did his job well. And, you know, I just think it's sometimes we jump up and down a little bit too much.
Yeah, well, I want to ask you about Keatley in a moment, actually. But yeah, I suppose, Dunica, we're a touch spoiled as Irish fans at the moment. The bookies had it at like a 25-point spread as well, which probably shaped expectations. I think at one point there were cheers or a few cheers when Fiji scored their first try. And to an extent, we have possibly all bought too much into the gospel of Joe Schmidt, in that we all assume there's a kind of USB he sticks into the players and they can all just perform exactly the same duties and are all in sync, even when a team has not played together ever before. And I presume you've been in that situation where you've been thrown out with 13 other lads for the first time together?
Yeah, I have. Like, what you chatted about it last week, you get known in Munster as the Muppets, you know, if you're that team that goes out. And sometimes when you're given the opportunity with your peers, you're nearly a little bit regretful. You'd love to have the spine of a team, you know, the main kind of, I'm not chatting about the huge leaders like the Rory Best, but the guys like Robbie Henshaw, guys like that, that, you know, they know what it's about now and they drive standards. And I think it's just small little things. Like you look at, you know, Ulton Deland dropping a ball and not getting down to kill it really quickly. But that leads to that try down the other end of the pitch. Kieran Marnion got tackled through a line-out. These are things that the likes of Sean O'Brien, Peter O'Mahony, they don't leave happen in their line-out. You know, they drive standards for it. So when you have a few of those around a pack, it's quite helpful. But I think I completely agree with Woody. I think we're being really harsh on the performance, or there was people being harsh on the performance. I thought it was quite good. Right. I thought it showed a bit of steel to get the result as well, especially with an inexperienced team, to show a bit of balls like that to get across the line. I thought it was great. And Woody mentioned Keats. I thought he was great. And for me, McCluskey, I thought was incredible.
I heard the general reporting or conclusions on McCluskey were, well, he did pretty well, but he didn't do anything eye-catching or amazing really either.
Yeah, Joe, you have to stop rating these kind of player ratings after matches from the papers. Yeah, I thought he was really good. I thought he was physical both sides of the ball. I thought he got into the game brilliantly with really physical hits against guys that were massively bigger than him. But what I loved about him was his double, multiple efforts, or, you know, his ability to get back in the game. And I thought for Dave Kearney's try, he'd two brilliant involvements, ran a really good switch play off the scrum to get gain line and give the initial bust. And then he got back in the play. And look, I'll be honest with you, in modern rugby, your 12 is becoming so important to forward runners. And I thought he did a great job of nearly showing Rhys Ruddock and helping Rhys Ruddock to run the positive upfield line while he was out the back and able to give that pass to get Tandy Conway, to get Dave Kearney in the corner. And I like that about him. I like that he gets multiple involvements. And I think your quality players do that, you know, that they're not quite happy to just have one touch on the ball and fall off. He gets involved an awful lot, and I like that about him.
Okay. You both mentioned Keatley. He gave a really good press conference yesterday, and I'll surmise some of the quotes for you, Keith. He was talking about driving out of Carton House last spring at the end of Six Nations camp, and almost in a calm way, actually, just reconciling himself to the fact that, well, that's probably me and Ireland done. That's it done, I'd say, most likely, but that's okay. And he talked about then the birth of a child and family life, and obviously things at Munster put life very much into perspective. And he talked about enjoying his rugby a whole lot more. He said as well from his, you know, he was thinking back to when the kicking wasn't going well. Sometimes I was almost working too hard. I was driving myself nuts. I was training for hours. I was trying to fix something. I almost had to get low a little, let it go a little bit, especially my place kicking. I went through a bad time. Some people came up to me and said, would you not practice? which is kind of a funny thought because he was completely overdoing it. So he feels like he's reached a point where he's still taking his rugby very seriously. And he said he's having fun in a good way. That's for you, Keith.
Oh, sorry. I actually thought you were going to play a little piece.
That's me surmising the gist of it.
Okay. It's funny, or not funny, but I remember a couple of years ago, and Anthony Foley said, will you come up? Foley had built this pizza oven in his garden, and it was his way of... His cooking, and being so, he was unbelievably sociable around this pizza oven that was outside. And anytime he kind of wanted to put an arm around one of the players, he'd bring them out to Killaloo and cook a pizza there. It was brilliant, right? Now, and perfect for Foley, actually. And I remember he said, "Woody, do you want to come up? Get Nicola and the kids up." And he'd brought Ian out, and Ian was in the total doldrums, and he was having a hard time. He wasn't playing well. He was kicking poorly, and you could almost see him tightening up as he was going to kick the ball, you know. And he was kicking in training and kicking well, and then he'd go, and then the pressure, and you know, to come through all of that, and to be able to play, I think, like he's done in the last year, to have that sense of resilience. I mean, that's, he's not Johnny Sexton. Let's not pretend that he's the heir apparent. He's not. But it's magnificent to see a guy go through that and still be able to come out the other end and be able to enjoy it. And maybe it is on reflection with the passing of Anthony and with having a baby and being able to see a much bigger picture. And but I mean, he had some really, really hard days, and he never wallowed in it, and he fought with it. But there's something about that there's a sense of bravery and something magnificent in being able to see that. So when I see him come on, I was guilty of it the same 2 years ago. He'd come on the field, and I said, "Oh, Jesus, no," because you know he's. You could see it in him. His body language was just. He was miserable. You know, it was so hard, and it's whether we've grown with it in the last couple of years as well. So I see him coming on now, and I said, "Go on now, Keith. You know, it's go on, give it socks and do the right thing and go well." But I'm not fearful. You know, I was fearful for him as a guy, you know, and I do think it gets forgotten, and some of the emotions of this gets kind of passed over, that we stop looking at these these young men as young men, and we see them as international sportsmen, and sure, they have to be able to do all those sort of things. When you're down on your luck, it's pretty lonely, you know, and I just think there's something great to see how he has gone through this. I think it's very impressive.
One other thing that caught my eye, Dunica, he said when he, the last couple of camps, because there were so many calls, I didn't have them on the tip of my tongue. As a 10, you need to have them at the tip of your tongue. So I found when I was looking at space, I didn't have the moves rolling off my tongue. I know the calls pretty well now because I've been in a number of camps, and I feel when I step in, I'm comfortable making those calls. What an interesting thing, you know. I mean, I guess, as Keith says, it's probably naturally still a human being. And I dare say, and you've experienced a couple of Joe Schmidt camps, getting your head around those calls, especially as a number 10, is no small thing.
Absolutely. Look, Joe Schmidt's camps, 10 runs a show. And I suppose for me, I can only give my own experience that he was quite open and in the camps we were at. And it was very early in when Joe had just come in. But he was there, look, the Leinster lads are ahead of you. They know what I want to play. They know the patterns. They know the calls. And you need to get up to speed. And there's actually a nice thing that goes on around an Irish dressing room. I know we might, everyone goes on, you know, the provincial divides, but when you actually ask a teammate to help you out and spend a bit of time with you to go through different things, they will genuinely help you. And I think that happened an awful lot, but it's really difficult being the main decision maker, because not only do you have to learn them, but you nearly have to, you have to call the shots for everyone else, you have to see the space. And it's really difficult for a 10 to kind of, you know, I suppose that's, I think, where Johnny's been quite fortunate. He's had exposure to one of the best coaches in the world for quite a sizable part of his career. So it definitely gives him an advantage in that. But I think, you know, I agree with Woody. I was in the squad when, you know, we were all underperforming in Munster at that time. But it seemed like Ian became the fallout guy for it, you know, with different medias and supporters and even certain players and management. And just to see him at the weekend and just to hear those comments that he's enjoying it now. And I think, you know, an awful lot of people can do different things under pressure. But I think, you know, I think he's nailed what works for him, being relaxed in those moments. And I think if he can continue that now and bring it back to Munster and really establish himself as the number 110 there, then, you know, there could be plenty more Irish camps for him. And that was the bit I found oddest about it, that he's saying, just after having a kid, you want to get out Irish camp? No way, you want to get back in there. All the good night's sleep, food and laundry, it's brilliant.
I'm just thinking that for all the things that change, all the things that stay the same, and in 92, Jim Galvin, the Shannon out half, playing for Munster, put over an incredible drop goal to beat Australia in Musgrave Park. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And he got picked on the bench, and he was sitting on the bench with me. It was my first time on the bench for Ireland. And we're sitting on the bench 3 days later in Dublin. And he's got all these notes for all the calls in his hand, because we've only had one training session. Right? And I said, have you got them? He said, I don't know what to do. I said, because they're calling all these things. I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, if I get on and I get the ball, I'm going to boot the hell out of it. You know, that was it. The calls were, because it was like we'd no time then to do it.
Yeah,
and
sure.
The difference now is there's a huge amount of time, but there's a huge amount of calls, and it's incredibly organized. It is very the opposite, I think, of the Babas.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. He just he was honest about that and said, yeah, just didn't roll off the tongue. So two last things to touch on before we go. A tweet from @CrusadersRugby, and if you're very sensitive about national stereotyping, this would have bugged you. So Crusaders said about a couple of hours ago, top of the morning to you. We have some exciting news to start your day, to be sure. @RonanO'Gara10 is our new backs coach. So there you go.
Well, before we get on to the Ronan part, I remember Gary Halpin telling a story that when they toured in 97 with Ireland, there was a development tour to New Zealand, that there was an ad, yippee, the Irish are coming, you too could find a crock of gold at the end of your rainbow. So that hasn't changed either over that period of time.
Yeah.
How awesome is it?
Oh, it's amazing.
That this is going the other way. You know, we've been taking New Zealand coaches because they're bloody good and have a way of looking at the game that's at a higher level to us, and they're going and they're taking one of our own. And it's actually something to be quite proud of. I think it's amazing. It's so rare that New Zealand try and pluck somebody from the Northern Hemisphere. So rare. It's brilliant, actually.
He's setting the template, Dunnock, isn't he? About how you go about post-career and building up a CV. That's unbelievably impressive already.
Yeah, 100%. I think, look, he's been quite open that he wants to learn, he wants to improve, he wants to get better. And that's what drove him in his career. So he knows he's still quite young and he's coaching. And he wants to be like he was as a player, top dog. And he wants to have these experiences of working with quality teams and quality environments to make sure that, you know, that he's actually learning his trade. And what better places to do it? Look, I'll be honest, I'm not surprised, because like Woody, we know him, we know how driven he is, but he'll go there and he'll actually make an incredible impression on those lads. He'll improve himself. I think it's a win-win all round. And you know, obviously being friendly with the guy, you're delighted from, you know, so it's good.
I'm disgracefully late here, so probably just one comment each from both of you on the match. Some points regarding this being a revenge mission or not. It's interesting, since the 2015 World Cup defeat, the quarterfinal defeat, Ireland have had 31 debutants, I saw on the paper today, which is hard to believe. Only 8 of the 23 from that day are likely to be involved. So it's a completely new team in some respects from an Irish point of view. As for Argentina, Keith, they have been in the, since the Rugby World Cup 2015, they've had 6 wins and 23 defeats, largely the Rugby Championship being no fun at all for them. They've taken 50 long-haul flights just this year. They've only used 32 or 33 players as opposed to maybe 50. They're kind of saying that we're hoping all of this travel and all of these spankings at the hands of very good teams is going to come good for us come the next World Cup. But certainly in the short term, you've got to feel they must be feeling low on confidence and just desperate to get to a beach.
Yeah, I'd say low in confidence and shattered. And they've never won in Ireland, actually. They've beaten us in other places, but they haven't beaten us in Ireland. So I think Ireland will go in very confident about being very structured. We've pretty much a full team or thereabouts. Australia would always say that they can beat New Zealand because they play New Zealand all the time. Mm-hmm. And Argentina would love that to be true.
Yeah,
and it isn't true yet.
Yeah.
And they, even though Australia wouldn't have a huge amount of depth, they would have a lot more, and they would have a professional structure behind them. There isn't a professional structure behind Argentina, and that makes it very, very difficult. And they haven't picked the players that have been overseas in this year. 50 long-haul flights, I mean, come on. Mm. I mean, that just can't be good for you in any way. So, look, they really want and we need Argentina to be one of those powers, but I don't think we're getting the best out of them yet.
Mm. Dunica, it's a fairly expectant crowd again, and I mean, given what you're saying about last weekend against Fiji, of a very good, polished Irish performance, points on the board. Are you expecting that?
Yeah, I suppose I am. Look, I agree with Buddy's point. I don't think it's like for like at the moment. It's nothing of a revenge game. I'd actually like if we kept blooding, you know, even don't worry about the World Cup, but leading into the Six Nations and, you know, just have a look. I think we're, over the course of the autumn, we've seen we're strong in the back three and the back row, but I think maybe having a look at front five would be good. And I'd use this game as another opportunity. I'd love to see James Ryan. I don't think we've seen enough of him in this autumn. And, you know, I think we could go through there and find other guys. I think it's an opportunity. Obviously, everyone will go on about the World Cup, but this game isn't to the same value. So let's just use it as an opportunity to see more guys and prepare for the Six Nations that will put us in good stead.
OK, well, we'll see what happens. We'll review this game in a bit of depth next Wednesday, 8 o'clock. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, lads.
Off the ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.